Fasten your seatbelts and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip. Like every state in the union, Wisconsin is required to redraw its political districts once every 10 years, shortly after the U.S. Census is complete. While all states in the nation undergo this process, Wisconsin presents its own unique dynamics. Often, redistricting can lead to significant turnover in the people who represent the people of Wisconsin and the number of Republican and Democrats in the House of Representatives. Consequently, both parties spend millions of dollars every 10 years on research and lawyers in hopes the maps will be drawn in their favor. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shireen Seward. Redistricting is a high-stakes endeavor, one that can directly impact the lives of people living in north-central Wisconsin for years to come. In Governor Tony Evers' 2020 State of the State address, he created a nonpartisan redistricting commission comprising the people of our state, not elected officials, not lobbyists, and not political party officials, who will draw the people's maps. These folks are hearing directly from voters across the state from every congressional district. They've pledged to work together to draw fair and impartial maps for the legislature to take up this year. But the issue of fairness is also a matter of debate. And as things stand today, Wisconsin is often referred to as the most gerrymandered state in the country. Joining us today to make sense of Wisconsin's redistricting process is political scientist Eric Giordano. He is the executive director of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service. Eric, welcome to Route 51.
Thanks, Shireen. Great to be here.
What questions do you have about the state's redistricting process? You can join the conversation by calling us at 800-780-9742. You can email us, too, at route51@wpr.org. When calling, please allow enough time for our producer to answer your call. So, Eric, let's start with the history of redistricting. So when did the requirement begin? Is this something that states have always done or not?
Right. Well, there is some constitutional provisions around census taking and districting. But actually, before the 1960s, there was really a huge amount of diversity in election law regarding redistricting throughout the states and the republic at that time. And a lot of it really had to do with issues around initially slavery and how slaves were counted as part of the census and apportioned. And then part of it was to protect, you know, the interests of southern states and frankly, even northern states later when immigrant populations started to come in. And so there were a lot of really different approaches to redistricting and apportionment that were done by the states. We can get into some details with that if you want.
Oh, for sure. And actually, I'm going to ask, how does Wisconsin's process compare to that of other states? Or is it all the same?
Right. Well, you know, since the Baker versus Card Supreme Court decision in the 1960s and the Voting Rights Act, really the Supreme Court kind of clamped down on the idea that when districts were drawn, they had to be roughly equal. And so you couldn't just simply change the numbers of people that were in one district versus another. So really, those the states now can determine within a certain percentage how many people are in each district. But since that time, Wisconsin has, you know, redistrict based on the census every 10 years. And it roughly has to divide up the number of districts based on the apportionment that's received on the based on the census. So, for example, today, you know, there are 10 slots that are apportioned to Wisconsin. And so we have, I'm sorry, eight. So we have eight districts. And so those have to be roughly divided up and the maps drawn to determine those districts after the census.
And that's different from other states. They have different processes from state to state then.
Right. Well, there are definitely different processes in place. So about 33 states, the responsibility for redrawing districts is empowered within the legislature or the legislative branch. And then there's often a executive veto power, and that's the case in Wisconsin. And most states do follow that. But then there are a number of states that use other sorts of systems. So, for example, Michigan has a non-politician commission that it uses. Colorado has a similar thing. So does Arizona and California. And then there are a couple of states like New York in which they've created a basically non-political commission that drafts the maps, and the legislature can accept or reject that. And then Virginia has something similar. So yeah, there are many different ways to do it, but the most states do it the way Wisconsin does, which is to have the legislature be in charge of essentially drawing the maps, and then the governor gets to decide if he's going to accept or reject that.
So that's how it goes in Wisconsin. The legislature draws the lines and then it goes to the governor. Is that how it works?
Well, that's how it sort of works formally on paper. But, you know, a lot of times, you know, if you think of this as an analogy like budgets, right? So in the U.S. Congress, it's the Congress that's responsible for actually passing budgets every year. But often it's the president and the executive branch that creates the budgets, and then the Congress kind of reacts to it. They often will amend it and change it up, you know, to meet their interests and needs. And I think similarly, that's what's happening here in Wisconsin. The legislature is in charge technically of drawing the maps, but the governor, as you've pointed out, has created this commission. And so there is a process that underway through the executive branch where he and the people that are working on this commission are going to be drawing some maps, but then they have to present those to the legislature, and the legislature has to either accept, amend, or, you know, do something to approve them. And then the governor can decide if he likes what they have, how they have amended it or approved it.
Has the process changed, evolved in some way in Wisconsin, or has it kind of always been this same process?
Well, like I said, historically, if we go back, you know, quite a ways, there were lots of ways in which the districts were drawn based on kind of a lot of interests around protecting certain populations and in fact, the majority white voters at the expense sometimes of non-white and immigrant voters. But ultimately, at least since the 1960s, this is kind of how it has gone. Now, if you look at back to 2010, you could say, well, on paper, the process was supposed to be the same. The legislature drew the districts, the governor could accept or reject it. But one of the things that happened in 2010 that was a little bit unique is that there were a lot of private entities that got involved along with the majority Republicans to help draw and consult in the drawing of these maps. And so in some ways, I think that led to a lot of concern, certainly among Democrats, that this was done kind of outside of the public purview. And a lot of work was done by outside entities, and even, you know, the legislature paid other groups in some cases to help draw those maps, and then they adopted the maps that were drawn by these outside entities or in consultation with outside entities. So I think that was one of the reasons why some people were uncomfortable with the maps that were drawn, how they were drawn, the transparency of the process, how that was funded. And so I think that's led, at least in the case of Governor Evers now 10 years later, to try to kind of create a different sort of process.
I want to just simplify things here. When districts drawn, what impact does it have? I mean, why does it matter? Does it have an impact on our representation federally at the state level? What happens?
Right. Well, there's a couple practical ramifications that have little to do with politics, maybe, but have a lot to do with how Wisconsin, receives funds in terms of the apportionment. Right. So I'm not talking about districting now. I'm talking about the process of the census determining how many seats Wisconsin will have, how many districts it will have, and seats in Congress. That can change based on the census. It doesn't appear that that's going to change for Wisconsin, so we're still going to basically have 8 representatives. So, but when it comes to the redistricting piece, that has huge implications for political parties and the ability of parties to control not only who gets elected to the Congress, but really right down to the you know, ward and district level for who gets elected to the Wisconsin Assembly and Senate, because all of those boundaries ultimately start at that level and then go outward from there, right? Because one of the things that the state constitution demands about our redistricting in Wisconsin is that we do try to take into account the municipal and county boundaries and try to adhere to those boundaries when possible. So, but, you know, you can split sometimes those things, you can, you know, draw the lines differently. And depending on how you draw them, you know, there's this kind of concept of cracking and packing that maybe some of your viewers have heard about. You can pack together certain types of individuals who tend to vote a certain way, or you can split districts in a way that dilutes the power of certain groups and their ability to influence politics. So ultimately, when it comes right down to it, this really has huge impacts for who gets to control the legislature in Wisconsin, and ultimately, you know, the election for the congressional seats as well.
So it's more really than just splitting by population. There are much wider implications here, it sounds like. And when we talk about representation in the U.S., we often hear this phrase, one person, one vote. You know, we hear that a lot. But the Supreme Court ruled that districts have to be equal in population. So are we really talking about one person, one vote when it comes to this?
Not truly, because, you know, if we did, you know, we would definitely have certain states that might not even have the same representation because of their lower population levels. And we would have, for example, Washington, D.C. Residents have the vote, or people who are on the islands of Guam and American Samoa and, you know, Puerto Rico, who don't have the vote. So although in theory, you know, the 14th Amendment suggests that, you know, we have to have equal protection under the laws, and therefore, you know, one person, one vote. The reality is, you know, we aren't a perfectly, you know, segmented, you know, grid-oriented population apportionment system. So, you know, some states do have a little advantage. The smaller states have a bit of an advantage in some ways.
That brings me to a question about rural areas versus urban areas. If we're talking about population, are large cities then dominating policy and silencing the votes of rural residents? Is that a possibility?
Well, you know, you talked about ramifications, and you know, there's a lot of ramifications we haven't talked about, and I appreciate you bringing that up, because that is one of the big issues. In fact, historically, this has been one of the issues that, you know, has sort of divided the parties in terms of how they want to draw these district maps to favor, obviously, their party and give them a better chance for representation. And, you know, people talk about gerrymandering and how, you know, sometimes districts are drawn in strange and funny ways and oddly shaped ways. And one of the reasons is exactly gets to your question, which is, you know, Republicans in particular, who find that much of their base really is in the rural areas, have really attempted over the last, you know, several decades to try to ensure that those rural folks are represented in those districts in ways that make their vote more powerful and count. So, you know, we can draw the map in a certain way so that, you know, we make sure that it includes a large rural population. We might try to split a few of the suburban areas or even some of the urban areas so that, you know, it dilutes those folks. And so part of the gerrymandering issue is really just about self-selection, about who goes where and who chooses to live where. So more progressives are flocking to cities. And so cities are almost exclusively dominated, you know, by the Democratic Party, and districts that include those urban areas are almost always, you know, secure seats for Democrats. But districts, you know, that are focus on rural areas are very mostly secure for Republicans. And so, of course, there's going to be an attempt by both parties to try to draw the maps in a way that favors them. But in a way, we're also, by our own choices as citizens, self-selecting where we want to live and thus the kind of districts that we end up in.
You're listening to Eric Giordano. He is our guest today on Route 51 for a discussion on the redistricting process underway in Wisconsin and its potential impact on the lives of the people of North Central Wisconsin. Your questions and comments are welcome, too. Join us by calling 800-780-9742. You can also send an email to route51@wpr.org. When calling, please allow enough time for our producer to answer your call. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Eric Giordano, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service, is here today for a discussion on redistricting in Wisconsin and how it could affect you. We'd like to hear your questions, too. Email us at route51@wpr.org or join us by phone. The number to call is 800-780-9742. Eric, before the break, we were talking a little bit about gerrymandering, and that is a big buzzword. We're hearing a lot of that. Wisconsin sometimes referred to as the most gerrymandered state in the country. Can you explain gerrymandering in layman's terms? What is it exactly?
Right. Well, thank you. I think Maryland might, folks in Maryland might disagree that I think they sometimes think they're the most gerrymandered, but whether Wisconsin or Maryland, gerrymandering really is the act of politicians manipulating and redrawing the legislative district lines. And of course, with a purpose, right? To help their party, to hurt the other party, you know, to get as much representation for their party as they can. And, you know, this has been an historical phenomenon in American politics, really, you know, since the origins of the country and our sort of immediate split into sort of two political factions. So Elbridge Gerry is whom this idea is named after because of the way that some districts were drawn in the state of Massachusetts. And there's a famous picture that maybe many of your viewers remember of this kind of dragon-like shape that kind of spans across the western part and northern part of Massachusetts. So ever since then, you know, politicians have been trying to manipulate those lines. And for better or worse, the courts in our country at the highest level have basically said, look, we do think there are some reasons why we have to protect certain voters, like we want to, you know, because of issues of slavery and Jim Crow and discrimination against particularly African-American voters, but other voters as well. You know, we are going to limit some of how, you know, politicians are able to manipulate districts. But in terms of just political partisanship, the courts have seemed to sort of take a back seat and say, you know, we can't really change that. You know, that's part of the nature of our system. And even if we could, what would we do to make it fair? And so, you know, gerrymandering, you know, is still very, it rules the day, as you pointed out here in Wisconsin still.
Is there a specific part of Wisconsin that gerrymandering seems to be the biggest issue, or is this statewide?
Well, of course, I think to some extent it's statewide because, like I was saying earlier, right, when we redraw these boundaries every year, it really starts from the ground up. I mean, it really starts at the, you know, at the level of the assembly districts and the Senate districts, and then it kind of trickles up, if you will, from there, because a collection of those districts then join together to form the congressional districts. And of course, that's based somewhat on population, and we have to make sure that there's roughly equal population in each district. So it's kind of a complex process. But, you know, so all of that is taken into consideration if you're, say, the Democrats or the Republicans, if you're trying to, you know, control the legislature, get as many safe seats, quote unquote, safe seats as you can, have control over the assembly and the Senate, and ultimately, you know, get as many representatives from your party in Congress elected, then you really have to pay attention to all of it. So you might say, well, and down in Milwaukee, we're going to, you know, make sure that the maps are drawn in a way that, you know, are obviously going to pack people who vote, you know, Democratic, which tends to be the case in urban areas, into as, you know, as few districts as possible. And then we're going to maybe spread some other districts out in a way that ensures, you know, packing people who support Republicans into those districts. So how has this affected the actual map? I think the most clear example of this kind of crazy, you know, map drawing is really the 7th CD right here, right? I think most of us know that. If you just look at the shape of the district itself, it is a very strange looking district, which clearly tries to, you know, get certain groups into the district and leave other groups out, particularly in comparison to what it looked like, you know, back before 2010.
So you mentioned Maryland, and we hear a lot about Wisconsin's gerrymandering. How does Wisconsin compare with other states when it comes to these irregularly shaped districts around the country? Is this the norm, or more, do other states have a different way?
Well, yes to both. I mean, it is the norm in some states, and we can name probably the top three, I guess, egregious gerrymandered states would be Wisconsin. They're definitely in the top three. Maryland, and usually most people kind of throw North Carolina in there, and there are others as well. But on the other hand, there are some states that seem to have, you know, chosen a different path and sort of have a different approach. And I think I've mentioned a few of those. I think New York, Virginia, Iowa is probably the poster child of this kind of fair maps approach to redistricting. And really, we've seen evidence of this in Washington State, in Idaho, and other places where, you know, there are ways that districts can be drawn a little more fairly. And part of it is just the process that's chosen by each state and the ability to limit the impact of those who would like to gerrymander. And part of that is process is sometimes having, you know, non-political people involved in the redrawing. Sometimes it's ensuring there's sort of a double check on map drawing. For example, there's, like you mentioned, some citizen panels. Sometimes there's nonpartisan commissions. Sometimes the courts in some of these states, the courts will have an ability to get involved and you know, even constitutionally, in order to redraw maps that they feel are unfair. So yeah, states have taken a lot of different approaches to try to reduce gerrymandering, but I think the majority of states still offer a lot of opportunity for gerrymandering. And Wisconsin just happens to be one of the most egregious in the sense. And I think it's partly because of it's basically controlled by the Republican Party at this point. So they're able to have that power to redraw those maps favorably to them. Now, this time around, 2020, it's going to be very interesting because although the legislature is dominated by the Republicans, the governor is a Democrat and he has veto power. So that'll be a very fascinating negotiation to see where we end up in terms of how these maps are drawn after 2020.
So we've touched on the fair maps issue, and this is another buzzword that we're hearing a lot right now. Over the last several years, 54 Wisconsin counties, at last check, representing about 80% of the people of Wisconsin, have passed these resolutions or referenda supporting nonpartisan redistricting in Wisconsin. But who ultimately determines what is fair? I mean, who makes that decision? Because fair seems to be different in the eye of the beholder, I guess.
Exactly. And I think that's ultimately, if you put your finger right on it, Shereen, I mean, this is part of the challenge of trying to, you know, draw maps in general and then come out of it and say, yes, this was fair, or maybe to accuse the other side of drawing maps in a way that's unfair. And I think it's sort of why the Supreme Court to date has consistently basically said, look, we do not feel like this can be a adjudicated by the courts, right? This is an issue for the legislatures of each state to determine, you know, what they want and how they want to do it. And I think, you know, this is really the issue because, you know, in a winner-take-all type system that we have here, how those maps are drawn is so critical to every election, you know, from the assembly, state assembly, to the state senate, and ultimately to our congressional representatives. And so there's a lot riding on this. And so, you know, a lot of the comments that, you know, I've heard from Republican friends after the redrawing of maps based on the 2010 census was, hey, look, all's fair in politics. And, you know, we have the majority in the House and the Senate. We control, in the Assembly and the Senate, we control the executive office. So it's our prerogative, you know, to draw these maps. And if they favor us, that's fair because that's our system. And if the Democrats win, then they can just, you know, do the same thing. And they have done the same thing in the past. But it's tough to figure out what fair is under those circumstances.
Sure. Well, let's talk about the Fair Maps Commission. In Governor Tony Evers' 2020 State of the State address, he created this nonpartisan redistricting commission I mentioned earlier. They are not elected officials. They're not lobbyists. They're not political party officials. And these are the folks who are going to initially draw the maps and then pass them on. But when we're talking about political appointees, is it really possible to have a nonpartisan group? I guess, in other words, if they're appointed by a Democrat, would you expect the appointees to lean in that political direction or not?
Well, I think if I'm a Republican, I'm immediately going to assume that the people appointed to that commission are going to lean Democrat. Now, I know that in his executive order, he has a very explicit language there about nonpartisan members. I would like, you know, to take him at his word. Can the Republicans trust that he will? And that's really a question that's open for debate. It kind of gets back, even though whether they're partisan or nonpartisan, it still gets back to the question of, you know, what is fair? And I think there is an answer that I think the fair vote folks would probably say, which is, you know, it's not that we have to have maps that guarantee one party or the other, you know, have certain number of seats versus the other, but maybe it's about making these districts and the races within the district election races competitive so that, you know, we're not necessarily having these kind of huge voting disparities. Like, I think after the 2016 election, there was only one congressional district in Wisconsin that a candidate won with less than 20% margin of victory over the opponent. So in other words, that's a huge gap between the winners and the losers. And a lot of that gap really has to do with how the districts were divided up, because our state itself does not have that kind of a gap when it comes to voting patterns in the last, 8 years. I mean, we're pretty much right down the middle, you know, almost 50-50, but our elections and the results of those elections don't reflect that because of the way that these districts are drawn. So maybe a version of fairness, you know, no matter who draws the maps, might be more competitive districts. And we can talk about why that's important, because that really has ramifications, not just for which party controls power, but whether the extremes from each party are going to have a bigger voice over the moderate middle. But that's something we can talk about if you'd like in more detail.
Sure. Well, go ahead. I'd like to hear more about that.
Well, I think that's part of the reason why, you know, this fair maps and fair voting kind of movement has really taken hold in a lot of states and really nationally, because I think people are kind of generally not at the extremes in our country. I mean, we've always been sort of a country that's in theory had a moderate middle, or at least a group that we, you know, consider a moderate middle. That may shift a little left, a little right, but most of us are not sort of at the extremes. But what's happening because of the gerrymandering and the way districts are drawn is that it is encouraging safe seats. I think the last I heard from some research is that 85% of the congressional seats for the U.S. Congress are now considered safe seats. In other words, each party has a lock, no matter who they put up as a candidate, no matter, you know, who the opponents put up as a candidate, either the district's going to go Democrat or Republican, and we can predict that almost 85% of the time. If you think about it, that means that the kind of candidates that are likely to run for office or be selected for office in those districts are going to really represent a fraction of the people who actually vote. And they may be a little bit more to the extreme, more partisan than we're, and I think we're seeing this really across the board in terms of who's elected. So if you don't like, you know, Ilhan Omar, you think she's too progressive, or you don't like, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene because you think she's, you know, too extreme on the right. Part of the reason they're able, you know, to get in there with more extreme viewpoints is because their districts are completely safe because of the gerrymandered nature of those districts.
That's interesting. I know in next week's spring election, voters in a number of counties, Ashland, Polk, and Richland, along with voters in the city of Appleton, will be voting on yet another Fair Maps referenda. Will the result have any real impact on the process? In other words, does public opinion matter?
You know, it's a great question, Shireen, and I guess the answer really depends on whether the legislators, you know, or elected officials are actually listening and care about, you know, these referenda. And to date, I would argue that it seems as if they really have not been moved by these kind of referenda. You know, we don't see any a lot of strong movement among the majority Republican caucus to make changes despite these local initiatives. And, you know, as long as they hold power and the power is controlled by an element of the caucus that, you know, is not willing to move around a fair map system, it seems unlikely that they're going to, because what are the, you know, what's at stake for them is control over the legislature. So, you know, maybe if we were in their shoes, we would feel the same way. It's hard to say.
You're listening to Eric Giordano from the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service. He's our guest today on Route 51, as we discuss the state's redistricting process and the implications for the future of representative in our state. When we return, we'll talk about what happens next in the process and what to expect in the coming months. What questions do you have? Join us by calling 800-780-9742. You can email questions as well to route51@wpr.org. When calling, please allow enough time for our producer to answer your call. I'm Shireen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shireen Seward. Political social scientist Eric Giordano from the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service is here today for a discussion on redistricting in Wisconsin and its potential impact on residents in north central Wisconsin. Your questions are welcome. You can email us at route51@wpr.org, or we'll answer your questions if you join us by phone. The number to call, 800-780-9742. So, Eric, redistricting is not a quick process in any way. So where are we now and what happens next?
Right. Well, not only is it not a quick process, Shireen, but the process has been delayed considerably from what was considered normal. And look, we've got to put the blame where it belongs, and that's on COVID. COVID has really set you know, the Department of Commerce and the Census Bureau, the reports of the Department of Commerce in getting returns, you know, that really reflect the count for the census. And so that really backed everything up. So, you know, it was supposed to be, you know, results were supposed to be delivered, you know, in January, then it got pushed back to March. And now we're looking at April 30th as the date by which the census data will be theoretically available from the federal government. So that kind of pushes everything, you know, forward or into the future. So if we were to fast forward really quick, in theory, by, say, January of 2023, that might be the first election, or any election after that, I should say, might be the first under which we're likely to see the new maps redrawn. So what's going to have to happen is not only are we going to get the census numbers at the end of April, then I think the delay in getting the apportionment settled is, I think, around September. And so we can't even begin to really redraw those maps until then. So again, fast forwarding, that means by the time, you know, we redraw the maps, assuming that process doesn't take, you know, itself a couple of years because of litigation and so on, then hopefully by 2023 in the spring, that's when we should be able to see some new maps drawn for the state of Wisconsin.
I find that surprising. I thought it would be a quicker than that. I mean, I know it's an intricate process, but I didn't realize that it would take that long before we'd have some answers.
Well, I mean, it could be sooner. Like, you know, that was the projection. The projection is based on the Wisconsin Legislative Reference Bureau that kind of put out this redistricting timeline, but that was before some of the delays that we've had. So originally in that timeline, they thought that November 8th might be the first general election under which we'd have November 8th, 2022, by which we might be under the new maps. But I'm saying the likelihood of meeting that is not strong, given what's happened recently with the delays.
And you did mention the court system and those delays as well. I know there's some interesting legal issues at play right now. The Wisconsin Supreme Court had a request back by Republicans to change its current procedures for handling cases related to the process of drawing new political boundaries. Are you familiar with that case? Do you know what they really want to see happen?
Can you give me a little more detail? Because are we talking about the entire aftermath of the Gill versus Whitford and the challenge to the 2010 census?
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right. What? My gosh. Where do we start? Seriously. You know, in 2011, the state legislature approved this redistricting plan. It was signed into law in the summer of 2011, but immediately there were some challenges to that it violated, you know, the Voting Rights Act and, you know, other constitutional criteria. There were a bunch of residents that filed, you know, plaintiffs, I guess, that joined on to that. I think there were like 15 plaintiffs or something like that. Anyway, it just went through a series of sort of Wisconsin court system battles, and ultimately the state district court in the Western District of Wisconsin. I was trying to remember exactly which court it went to.
Sure.
And they ruled, you know, against the districting plan that the Republicans had generated. And Judge Kenneth Ripple, who was sort of wrote the opinion in that, basically said that the act that led to the redistricting was intended to burden the representational rights of Democratic voters by impeding their ability to translate their votes into legislative seats. So basically, he was ruling this was a gerrymandered system that violated ultimately the Equal Protection Clause, right, in our Constitution. There was some dissent to that, okay? And then after that, it ultimately made its way up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court stayed that finding. So initially, the maps were going to have to be redrawn, but the Supreme Court kind of stayed that and said, no, you know, we're going to hear this case and we're going to make sure that, you know, this is legal and so, or, you know, approved. So you can't redraw the maps. And ultimately the court ruled 9-0, in that Gill versus Whitford case against the plaintiffs. But the issue there is it was more of a procedural ruling in the sense that they didn't feel like the plaintiffs had standing in the court. So it ultimately kind of crushed that effort. And since then, it's been, you know, unsure, I think, what the path forward is, other than, you know, here we have an opportunity, if you're a Democrat in 2020, to potentially redraw the maps again that are slightly more favorable to them and a little less favorable to the Republicans. But we'll see.
I know both Democrats and Republicans spend a whole lot of money on legal fees, legal expenses related to these things. Do you think that these legal challenges are common, and are they going to increase? Is that kind of the trend that we're seeing?
Absolutely. Right. I mean, not that this is a perfect analogy, but if you just look at the last election and the number of lawsuits associated with that election, I think, you know, people are starting to think to themselves, look, we are going to use every tool that we possibly can to get, you know, what is best for our group, whether it's, you know, the Republican Party, the Democratic Party. it's you know, it's similar. I mean, so yes, I absolutely feel like, you know, we're going to see more litigation. I really don't, you know, just as a citizen, I find it really annoying, but I understand why it's happening. And I can imagine, you know, depending on what happens with this commission that Governor Evers has set up and the maps that they draw and how the legislature reacts to those maps and how, what they put forward and, you know, whether or not Governor Evers accept that. I mean, what happens if, you know, he continues to veto, you know, a set of maps that come out of the legislature? What's going to happen? Like, how do we adjudicate that? So absolutely, I expect we're going to see a lot of litigation around this topic going forward.
And what does happen if the governor vetoes this? I mean, what's the next step then? That it just, and it seems like that could happen. Have we ever seen that happen before?
Not that I'm aware of. Not that I'm aware of. Maybe there's someone who has a little bigger grasp on our history, but I am not aware of anything that could potentially look like what we are potentially going to see here in Wisconsin if the governor and the legislature cannot agree on a set of maps. I think maybe it could end up in the courts, or it could just I mean, we'll really have to see. I mean, probably the default is just to continue with the current district approach until the new districts can be agreed upon.
Well, it's certainly going to be interesting to see what happens as time moves forward. When these new districts are drawn this year, do you expect to see major changes? Do you think that will happen?
That's a great question. I don't really know. I just think there's a lot of variables at play here. Clearly, you know, if you take the 7th CD, right? You know, the progressives, the Democrats, really lost out after the 2010 census in terms of how the 7th CD was redrawn, right? I mean, we lopped off some definite blue areas to the south that ended up, you know, getting packed into a different district. And so I think that diluted the progressives' ability to, frankly, run a competitive campaign for Congress. And unless, you know, that some of those maps are redrawn in a way to re-include some of those blue areas into the 7th CD, then it's going to continue to be red. So I would expect that the Democrats are going to try very hard, you know, to redraw that 7th CD for sure. Some of the other districts, I think we could see some changes, but it's hard to know, you know, how much, you know, they'll change and whether those changes would really make any substantial difference. So, I mean, a lot of it just boils down to, really computer models. And that's maybe something we haven't talked about yet, Shireen, which is how the entire redistricting system ultimately changed in the 1970s and after the 1970s because of computer modeling, which began to supplant sort of this guessing game and hand count sort of approach. Now there are some really sophisticated, you know, programs out there. So literally, you know, both parties can get down to the household in terms of, you know, who's likely to vote for whom or not vote at all, and then try to draw the maps in a way that's favorable. So a lot of what those maps will look like depends on the modeling that's done and what each side feels like they can negotiate and win on.
How long has this computer modeling been going on? How long has that been part of the process? Is it relatively new?
Oh, gosh, that's a great question. Let me. I'll have to look that up real quick.
Sure.
It's definitely been in the last quarter century that's really taken off. And I would say even since the 2000s, it's become extremely sophisticated. There are a couple of pioneers who were Democrats, ironically, out of California, who really were the first to kind of use the system. Their names were, I was just looking up really quick, Burton and Berman used that kind of sophisticated modeling. And I think they began to do that in the 1970s. But I think, you know, our ability to have the data and model that in a much more, you know, using algorithms and things have been really in the last quarter century that's really been impactful.
Sure. Well, let's talk a little bit about Iowa. You mentioned Iowa earlier in the program as kind of a, You know, one of the places that we look to for solving the problem of gerrymandering, that they appear to have done so. They're career civil servants, not the leaders of the party in power, draw those maps. They use specific criteria that prohibit them from using democratic voting data to rig the districts in favor of one party or another. What makes Iowa so unique? And is it a potential model that Wisconsin could follow?
It could be, but it doesn't appear we've sort of gone down this path. And basically, Iowa has created something called the Legislative Services Agency, which prepares the redistricting plans, and then they submit that to the Iowa State Legislature. And so what does this Legislative Services Agency consist of? It consists of civil servants, which are, in theory, committed to nonpartisan approaches, and they're charged with that task of, you know, like a legal and kind of fiscal analysis of the approach. So the members, I guess that's one unique thing about Iowa, are supposed to be kind of civil servants. That's one criteria, and that's something we haven't heard a lot about in Wisconsin, whether or not we want to go down that path. One of the members is selected by the majority leader of the Iowa State Senate. A member of this commission or agency is selected by the majority leader of the House of Representatives, right? So each house is represented, and then a member is selected by the minority leader from the House and from the Senate in Iowa. And then there's another member that's selected actually by the other four members. So that commission is really a group of civil servants that are not allowed to hold partisan public office or be in office in a political party. They can't be a relative or employee of a federal state legislator. So there are all these kind of conditions in terms of who gets selected initially to help redraw those maps. And then there's some processes and procedures they have to follow to do it. And so the question is, you know, is that something that Wisconsin would like to do? There's certainly people who have suggested it, but we haven't seen any. I mean, I think we've actually seen some attempts at legislation by the minority party, the Democrats, to try to move towards this kind of system, but that's been basically rejected by the majority party at this point.
I know the Fair Maps Commission lists the Iowa model as one that they would like to see. That's listed on their website as one that they would like to see implemented here. So I think that's interesting. But public opinion is a significant factor in Iowa's model. And we talked earlier about whether or not public feedback really matters here. And if it doesn't, do we need some legislation to enact that, to make sure that public opinion is taken into account?
Right. I think it's going to be tough because, you know, as we've discussed, when, you know, we have a legislative body that's controlled by one party and that party pretty much has a lock on power, right? I mean, we're not talking about a small divide in the Assembly and the Senate. We're talking about a pretty major divide here. And as long as it remains that way, it's going to be really hard for the minority party, or quite frankly, even average citizens who want to see change, to get that change unless they can convince, you know, the caucus, the Republican caucus, that these changes are really important. So I would argue that these referenda are, you know, that are being passed in these local municipalities and counties are important in the sense that they're sending a signal to the legislature of what citizens want. But ultimately, you know, the citizens in each district, in each area, are going to have to, you know, speak out to their representatives if they really believe that, you know, change is important. I mean, that's the only way I think that legislatures are going to listen and perhaps move towards this type of a system.
Very briefly, one last question. Do you see any major changes happening that could shift the balance of power on a national level? Is that going to happen?
Unfortunately, it looks as though things are becoming even more polarized, and where safe seats are able to be controlled by one party or the other. And we, you know, we're picking a little bit on the Republicans here in Wisconsin, but, you know, the shoe's on the other foot in many other states, and it doesn't seem like there's a lot of momentum to want to sort of change and move towards a fairer kind of approach or more of a nonpartisan approach. So, you know, we're going to continue to see these safe districts, and we're going to continue to see both parties really scrambling to do everything they can to hold on to them. So that partisanship and that divide, I don't think is going to go away anytime soon.
Thank you very much for this fascinating discussion. That's all we have time for today on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seewert. Once again, thanks to our guest, Eric Giordano from the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service. Our producer is Joy Rotch-Kramer. Our executive producer is Rick Ryer. Rick is also our on-air producer today. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program at WPR.org/Route 51. Next week, a discussion on local tourism and the arts and the impact on the regional economy. And in 2 weeks, two award-winning artists will join us to talk about their work and the inspiration they find in the creation process. Until then, we're heading out of town.